Welcome to the Lending Forward podcast, brought to you by Atlantic Bay Mortgage Group. This is your home for real discussions about the mortgage and housing industry. Our hosts are here bringing you firsthand accounts every week from people at the heart of the business. And we're chatting with professionals from all corners of the industry as they help cultivate transparency around the future of the industry we love. Together, we are lending forward all we know to you. Thanks for joining us for today's episode. Let's dive in.
All right, we are back for another episode of Lending Forward, and I am so excited for this episode for a couple reasons. Not only do we have a powerhouse guest that we get to chit chat with, but our director is coming out from behind the curtain. Miss Sarah Rogers is here to co-host with me. Sarah, say hey.
Yeah. Hi, everyone. I'm out of my comfort zone, but I'm excited. I'm super excited for the guest we have and to be doing this with Hannah. So here's my face. I'm not hiding, you know, behind the scenes anymore. So let's do it. I'm excited.
Awesome. Do you want to introduce Renee?
Yeah, I'll go for it. So I was lucky enough to see you a couple of times recently, Renee, in Austin at Housing Wire. And then I logged into GrowthCon and saw some of what you were saying on there. So when I had the chance to kind of co-host this and I knew it was you, I was excited. But for those of you who aren't as familiar, he is a best-selling author, keynote speaker, leadership advisor, transformational speaker coach, all of the things, and he's amazing at all of them. For the last 28 years, he's been researching and applying behavioral neuroscience to solve some of the toughest challenges in leadership and sales. And yeah, his knowledge is needed right now for our audience. So thank you, Renee, for hopping on.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It was an honor to be here. I appreciate the introduction. I'll bring you guys to introduce me everywhere.
This is great. I know. We are your hype squad for sure. And we have a ton of team members, when we told them, Renee was coming back on the podcast, they got super excited. So you've been on the podcast before, you've met Taylor. And that was, I think, roughly 2 years ago ish. Since then, you've launched a book that just climbed the charts. And I just have to know, when you talk about influencing people and influence, what does influence mean to you?
So I think influence is one of the, it's a big term used a lot. And I think its understanding is limited. Here's what I mean by that. A lot of people think influence is around, think about it as an offensive strategy from me to you. I have to influence you to do something for my benefit. There's so much more to it than that. There's a much deeper reason for it. Yes, it has its role in sales and marketing and branding and business. But there's a much bigger reason behind it. So let's just go through a sort of philosophical exercise that I always go through. To understand something at its core, I always try to look at its opposite or remove it to see what am I missing when I don't have it. And that kind of helps me understand its value. So imagine walking in a room and no one notices. You tell a joke and no one laughs. You sell a product and no one buys. You share an idea and nobody cares. You cast a vision and no one follows. How you feeling?
Awful.
Awful, right? I would say it's one of the worst of human experiences.
Yes.
And so think about it. Let's take that even deeper. Let's pretend that you're in a meeting and you feel, the word that I would put to that is insignificant, by the way. And so if you're in a meeting and you felt insignificant, you'd start asking yourself, why am I in this meeting? There's no reason for me to be here. If you were in a relationship and you felt insignificant, you'd probably start asking yourself, why in the heck am I in this relationship? If you were at work and you felt insignificant, you'd ask yourself, why do I work here? The sad part is too many people ask that question and don't feel significant in their life. Mm-hmm. And they start asking themselves some really tough questions.
Yeah.
And so when you really boil it down, it is such a critical part of the human experience. And when you don't have influence, means that if I don't have impact on people, if I try to do something and no one cares and I feel invisible, I question why I'm on this earth. Mm. Now let's bring it back. So I walk in a room, people notice. I tell a joke, people laugh. I sell a product, people are buying. I share ideas and they love them. I cast a vision and I watch people mobilize and take action. How am I feeling now?
On top of the world.
Pretty good.
Top of the world. Yeah. I would say exactly, it's one of the greatest of human experiences to have influence and impact on people. It's better than money. And So then we go, okay, so then now I feel significant. Mm-hmm. And so then now I know why I'm in this meeting. I feel significant in this relationship. I know why I'm in this relationship. I know why I work here. I know why I'm on this earth, which is the ultimate answer to the question of what's my purpose. Mm-hmm. And so to me, influence is about your significance, your impact, the mark or that fingerprint that you leave on the world. Now, when you do that, you can also leverage the same exact tools and same pieces to build a brand, sell a product, to recruit, to turn around an agent relationship, to develop more referral partners, to lead a team into a difficult time. It's all the same thing.
I want to dig in on that a little bit. And I was not planning on going this route, but I'm going to go this route. In an industry where, you know, they're predicting, I think, 70% of mortgage bankers to leave. They're predicting a lot of people to get out. I think a lot of that is the fact that people don't know why they're here. They don't have that why. They don't know why they were in the industry, other than money, maybe. But so it got hard and we're going to leave. How do we reframe them? Because I don't think all of them want to leave. They just don't see another option. How do we change that?
Well, I think there's two pieces to that. Let's just look at it from the different perspectives, right? So let's say I'm a loan officer and I hear other people are leaving. To some, that scares them. To the top performers, they go, good, yeah, more for me. Right? It's perspective. To a company, they go, wow, we're going to lose a lot of people. They say, we're going to lose talent. I say, you're going to lose underperformers.
Yeah.
Perspective. Mm-hmm. Right? The end of the day, your job doesn't change. You got to pick up the phone. You got to find people to talk to. You got to qualify leads, prospect, have presentations to explain your value, and convert that into an application that closes. Mm-hmm. That job doesn't change regardless of the news, regardless of interest rates, regardless of inventory. You still have to do that. Now, the reason why people are leaving, to be really honest, is they got in during an easy time. And so what they're being asked to do now is what every industry in the world is being asked to do, which is work to generate interest, have a great presentation, explain your value, uncover value that isn't seen by other people, and make the sale. What we've been used to for 3 years was, what's your social security number? Okay, done. Next one, what's your social security number? What's your social security number?
Right.
That's not real. Mm-hmm. And it makes me sad for the people that thought that was reality. Because now a little shift in the market, and I'm going to call it a little shift, because I don't need to label it any more than that. Mm-hmm. It's big, it's little, it doesn't matter. No president has ever determined my income, but yet people worry about who's in office. No interest rate, it doesn't do that. It's my work ethic does, my sales process does, my discipline does. And so leaders need to step up and stop coddling people through this process and stop enabling people to think it's a big deal and say, you know what? Good, let's wake up and let's learn how to sell. Mm-hmm. That's what our job is anyways. Yeah. Oh, guys, I'm sorry. It's really tough out there. I know we're just trying to keep our heads above water. That doesn't help anyone.
No.
Doing what you guys are doing, start podcasting, getting information out there, that's what helps. Mm-hmm.
I love that. And I say we preach on it all the time, but it's been, I mean, you hear it in every meeting that we have. It's about your mindset, your skill set, and your actions. Your mindset starts it. And if your mindset's in the gutter, you're not going to be able to focus on the rest. So let's focus on mindset a little bit, because you do have this narrative gap that you talk about. I want you to share it. I want you to kind of go into it with our listeners. Where did it come from? What is the thought behind it? Go.
Yeah. So that's a big topic, which is a good one. It's also what's most important right now. And it really comes down to the understanding of how we construct reality for ourselves. And so let's break it down. Finish this sentence for me. Perception equals what?
Reality.
Reality, right? So cool. We all know that. But here's the reality of that is that perception equals reality only for you. And only for you.
Yeah.
Only for me. So we have three different perceptions. Three coexisting realities. Yet we make the mistake of saying reality is the same for everyone. It's not. So then I got to go and say, okay, well, how do you construct your reality versus how I construct mine? Well, people say perception. Okay, well then how does perception work? It's not enough to say perception. Perception is the process, but it doesn't mean you understand it. So we have to understand the constructs of reality. And the one of the major constructs of reality is narrative, story. Mm-hmm. And so, but now we have to expand on what narrative means, because there's a much bigger, bigger understanding of what narrative than just a story you see on TV or once upon a time. A narrative is a beginning, a middle, and an end. And it, the narrative, the brain uses narrative to construct memory, mm-hmm. to categorize memory, to also make sense of the world. It's the second job of the brain. First is to survive. Second is to make sense of the world around us and the stimulus. And it does that through narrative. And so by ages, between ages 3 and 4, kids start realizing that there's a narrative in life. Dad's hungry. There's your middle. Goes to the fridge and eats something. Middle. He's not hungry anymore. End. Oh, when hungry, go to the fridge and eat. Okay, there's a narrative. It's a story. Ah, I walk from here to there. It's a movement through time and space. Okay, so then now by age 9 to 13, we start realizing those narratives are guided by values. Johnny is alone on Sundays. Okay, beginning. Mom always invites him to dinner on Sundays. Johnny's happy. Not alone anymore. Okay, when kids are alone, invite them into your family. That's driven, it's a value set. So when lonely? Now, by age 21, we start realizing that those values now apply across the board, not just situationally, not towards the Johnnies in the world, but if I see somebody at work, I see somebody on the street, I might apply that same narrative to how I might engage with that. So then we go, okay, we know that if narrative is how we construct reality, then we start realizing that there's a race and a battle for the narrative. We know that, right? Now, and that little weird moment of silence was awkward, wasn't it? And if you're listening to this, you're like, what did my tape, I said my tape.
What happened to Spotify?
Yeah, exactly. What happened there? So your brain went haywire. Stress went up. Did you get a little nervous? Like, uh-oh, here we go. Oh, guys, they're going to have to edit this piece out. All sorts of things started happening because what happened? There was a pause in the narrative. And your brain can't handle a break in the narrative. There's no break in the story of reality. It has to keep going. So the brain, in real time, will fill that gap with its own story, its own assumption based on past experiences. Unless you know me. And if you know me and you know my story, you'll fill that narrative with what you know about me. Branding, experience, relationships. Right? Mm-hmm. So if you didn't know that and you were listening, you know, like I'll ask, what went through your mind when I just paused and I looked to the right?
I thought the video was lagging. I was like, oh, we have a bad connection. Crap, we're going to have to start over. Like,
perfect.
I was going to say, I thought, well, I was typing my notes, so I thought you heard it and got distracted.
Yeah. See, look at it. So here's two completely different stories, right? One, the internet's lagging. Two, damn, I'm being rude and typing too loud. Right? Both are wrong. But your brain doesn't care.
Right.
It just needed a filler. Mm. And so think about how many narrative gaps are happening every day. Thousands. Yeah. What does your brain do immediately with a gap? It fills it. Fills it with what? An assumption. So that we can continue the course of narrative reality. So then when you realize that, if there's thousands of narrative gaps, your brain fills it with assumption. That means that most of our perception of reality or most of our life is an assumption.
And you're always told not to assume.
Right. Right. So what we think about, it's most of it is an assumption. And we have to, because there's so much stuff going on and our brain is constantly running. But now we look at two industries that know that really well. One is the media and the other is politics. Mm-hmm. They know that there's gaps and they want to be the trusted source. Because what happens is that we all had different sources. You know, you went through whatever your source to come up with the fact that, you know, the internet was that, because you've been on the Zoom calls, and we know that, especially with Riverside, it looks like it's not quality, but actually is recording in the highest quality. Well, we may experience a lag, but it doesn't experience a lag. That's what's so good about Riverside. And then you were maybe feeling self-conscious. By the way, you cannot hear the typing at all, but you're like, I'm going to type quietly, quietly, quietly. Oh man, I've been busted, right?
I've moved to a pen and notebook.
No, you can totally type. You can't hear it. It's perfect. And so now let's play out another example. We all work for the same company and the CEO doesn't show up to a meeting. One person says, let's say Sarah says, well, Renee didn't show up. Yeah, he's probably out getting another yacht. I don't know how many yachts he needs. I wish I had a yacht. And so, okay, that's one way to fill the gap. Now Hannah goes, wait a minute, Renee didn't show up. Let me call and see if he's okay. totally different way to fill the gap. So I go, okay, so we have two assumptions being made to fill that gap, two coexisting realities. One was yacht and greed. The other one was empathy and concern. Why? Why were they different? Why shouldn't they be the same if reality is reality? Okay, let's assess that. So maybe Sarah has experience with leaders being greedy people. Maybe Sarah and I were in a negotiation last month and I wouldn't give her the raise that she wanted. And so maybe that she's pulling from that experience or her past experience to fill in the gap. But maybe Hannah knew that my child was sick. And I said, hey guys, I'll be on the podcast as soon as I got to stop by the hospital, make sure everything's okay. And I don't come by. She's now pulling not from her own experience. She's pulling from mine. And so what does all this mean? There are gaps happening right now every single day with your realtor partners. If you're a leader, with the people that work for you, people you're trying to recruit, with your other, anybody that you're trying to do business with. And people are searching for some source to fill the gap. The question is, do people look to you? Yeah. If they don't look to you, that means you're not a trusted source. This is also the case for a brand. Why you need a personal brand? Why people need to know what promise you solve for them? What promise do you fulfill? And that, in all the cases, is what's going on right now. People don't know how to interpret the market. So we need to step up and start helping people do that. But the media is happy to do it for us for what serves them, which is breaking news, negative news, anything that captures eyeballs. Mm-hmm. And the same is true in politics. The more scared people are, the easier they are to influence to vote. We have to be better than that.
Yeah, agreed. I think something that you said when I heard you speak last was, where the attention goes, the money flows. So I think those things kind of go hand in hand with, you know, where people's minds go to when those gaps.
And you saw me do this at HousingWire when I walked off stage, right? And so think of how powerful it is. You watched me do this and I did it again and it still triggered that narrative gap assumption.
Maybe I just don't have a good memory, but.
No, it's one of those things that it's neurological, mm-hmm. right? It's how our brains function. So we have to embrace it and understand it and then get out in front of it. Absolutely. Well, someone's writing the articles. Why not it be you? Someone's hosting the podcast. Why not it be you? Someone's on that stage. Why not it be you? Someone needs to be that puts in the time and the effort to articulate a message that's trusted. Someone needs to be the one mailing out and making the phone calls and educating people, hosting the lunch and learns. Those are all ways to get in front of people and start sharing that. And so all the things in social media is a great place to do it, but most people don't understand how to actually gather attention on social media. And so content is one thing, but content that actually sticks is another. Mm-hmm. And so content without strategy just becomes a lot of noise. And so it's people say content, content, content. I go noise, noise, noise. What are you trying to say? Does it fit within your brand? Yeah. You posted something about that has nothing to do with who you are. Okay. Well, they say, well, you got to post who you are. Great. I post it. I like to cook. I like to work out and I like my family and I do all that. Awesome. That's not my brand. You just know me. You know a little bit about me. Now you might trust me a little bit more, but does that mean that you trust me to know the market? Probably not, because trust isn't all encompassing. I know people that I trust to be on time for a meeting, but I'd never trust them with my kids. I know people that I would trust with my kids, but I know they'll never be on time for a meeting. So trust isn't something that fits everybody. Trust is situational. Trust is like, you know, there's pieces of the pie to trust.
Yeah.
And so I know people that I would love and I want to be like them, but I would never ask them about the market. I know people that are hilarious. They know every meme. They know everything. They're up to speed on all the nuances and Tiger Kings and the Housewives. And man, they know all the new dances. And now you're going to tell me about the market? Nah, man, send me memes. That's mm-hmm. who you are to me.
Yeah.
We all have a brand, whether we like it or not. And so you have to really consider how do you want to be known? And when you walk in a room, what do you want people to expect from you? I know people that the moment I walk in a room, I better have my pencil sharpened because they're going to question me on numbers and they're good. That's a cool brand. You walk in the room and everybody goes, let me grab my calculator to make sure my number's right because they're good at this. And so that's what branding is in your leadership brand.
Yeah, I love that. So a lot of what I do has to do with, social media training, all of that. And I know something that you're really big on, and I think this kind of all ties together, is authenticity in social media. So I think a lot of people just post because they think they have to. And again, a lot of the times it's not relevant or going back to what they want to be known for or trusted for. So can you just tell our listeners a little bit about just like the importance about being completely authentic on social media and how, it's kind of easy to point out when someone's not being authentic anymore.
What? Well, so I said this to somebody. I go, imagine going viral on a topic that you don't have much knowledge on. That would be a nightmare.
would.
I mean, you go ridiculously viral on a topic that you are clueless about, but it was trending. You followed the trend and you accidentally said something funny, and now you're getting interviewed on this topic that you are an amateur on. That would be horrible. Or what if you're in lending and you went viral for dance videos? And now you show up to a meeting and you're like, weren't you that guy that split his pants while you're dancing? No, that video was great. You're speaking?
Right.
What? You're gonna teach us how to do dance video? I mean, so it's to be you would you don't want to go viral for any other reason except for who you are and what you believe. It would be horrible to do that. And so I think when we talk about authenticity, there's a lot to be said about that too. One of my favorite things to say is that authenticity requires no preparation. Because the best way to be authentic is what?
Yeah, to
To
be
be
you.
authentic. Just be authentic. And that means it doesn't require prep, it requires courage to hit play on the exact feeling and thought that you have right now. And most of us have a big filter to go, hold on, will people like this? Will I look stupid? And all of these filtering questions start coming in, distilling down and editing and twisting what we're going to say versus just saying it. I mean, I had a response to something in terms of what we're going to say around the brand, but I have to filter that one. Not to be shared here. It's how it works. So it's not that I'm not authentic. I'm just choosing that part is probably not relevant or germane. But if it's relevant and germane, can I have the courage to hit play on something, let's say even vulnerable? Most of us won't go vulnerable, which is the biggest superpower there is. Talk about dismantling and completely tearing down the walls and the guards of an audience. Share a tough story. You will have them eating out of your hands. Now, can people abuse that? Yes. But if you're authentic and you're using it to connect an audience, I think it's noble.
I like that. Sorry, Sarah, were you going to say something?
I'll just say I totally agree.
Oh, no, that is. And I think being authentic in or on social media is terrifying for a lot of people. I mean, I think turning on a camera in general and just posting is terrifying for a lot of people, let alone telling a true story about your life or why you believe something. Is hard, but I want to go back because you were talking through just the narrative gap and filling the space, and I'm just so I don't even know the word, like it's mind-blowing the listening to you talk about the neuroscience of your brain and how it all works. But you said something, and we were talking about this before the podcast, but I did my fair share of stalking of Renee before we came on here, and in one of the Instagrams I saw, you were talking about connection first. Nowhere else except for, I think, America, do people come at you talking business first. Everybody else needs that connection. So can you talk to us about that a little bit? Because I think it still goes hand in hand with being authentic, letting people know who you are in order to, take over that narrative gap.
Yeah, and you nailed it. We're the only country that does business first. You go outside of the country, you deal with people that are other ethnicities, and you talk business, they're like, wait a minute, hold, how about we eat first?
I would
All right,
always
let's
prefer to eat first. That's
absolutely,
yeah.
absolutely. And it's and then if you do that, you might have a 3 4 hour meeting. In the last 10 minutes, you're like, all right, so tell me about what you're thinking. We like you. It's easy to do business with people you like. That's the bottom line. And a lot of times we're stuck in this. And by the way, there are certain scenarios where you have to get right to the point. And if you're doing a Shark Tank presentation, you can't go, well, hey, before I present my deal, let me get to know you guys. Mark, tell me about your kids. They'd be like, no. How much? What percentage for how much? Tell me your product. You got 30 seconds. Go. Now, in that scenario, context does matter. for that. If you're in a budget meeting, you're not going to, you know, say, hey, before I tell you guys how far off budget we are, let's talk about our family. So like, no, are we on track or off track? Right. So context matters. And the analogy I like to give people is it's like tools in a toolbox or golf clubs in a golf bag. What's the favorite, what's the best golf club to use?
You're asking the wrong people.
It depends.
It depends on what?
On
which hole you're on.
Where you got to exactly shoot your shot.
What your objective is and what you're facing. And so it's the same is true in influence tools. They go, well, what should we do? Storytelling? I'm like, I don't know. It's a powerful tool. I just don't know if it's powerful
That's
now.
That's so good, Renee. Keep going on that.
And so we go, okay, so people are like, well, I want to tell us, Renee, I want to work with you because I want the story I want to share. And I will say this to shock value. I say, well, nobody cares about your story. Like, but don't you teach storytelling? I'm like, absolutely. Wrote a book on it too. But no one cares about it. Like, what do you mean? I'm like, well, think about it this way. You ever heard somebody that's a really good storyteller? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you know somebody who loves to tell stories?
Yes.
What's the difference?
Oh, yeah.
The difference is one thing and one thing only. The really good storyteller finishes the story with a lesson, a moral. There's value. They used the story to deliver this message of value. The person who loves to tell stories, they used something, but they used their time just to tell us a story. And at the end, there was nothing there. And so we know when they start, we're going, here's a glorious waste of time that's about to begin. Versus somebody who's a really good storyteller, we can't wait because there's a nugget. Mm-hmm. That's all dopamine, by the way. Dopamine is the anticipation of reward. And so if a really good storyteller, we know there's a nugget at the end, it's dopamine, the entire story until we get to that final piece. You remove the nugget, what we call the tie down or the value, it's just pure suffering to withstand the waste of time just to hear someone talk. And so when we're thinking about all of that, we're thinking about how do we then utilize the skill set of storytelling to be able to then deliver the message of value. It's a means by which. That's what it's for. But people make the big mistake of thinking it's the end. It's not.
Oh, that's good.
I know. Got it. That was awesome. I feel like I'm a little mesmerized. I want to focus one more time on social media because I work with a lot of mortgage bankers in day-to-day life. And so talking to mortgage bankers and how to get on social media and things like that. Even when they do get on, it sometimes gets awkward. They don't really know how to position themselves. Body language gets weird. Like you can just tell, like this, they're reading a script. Like this isn't it. So can we talk body language a little bit? Because I am a little fascinated on how can you kind of present yourself in a way that is more engaging on social media, since most of this is done through Zoom, to gauge that client or gauge that referral partner as, you know, you do know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I think it's, well, one, here's the thing. You can't avoid that awkwardness in the beginning. Awkwardness is a requirement for growth. And so but yet if we avoid awkwardness, we'll never grow.
I love that.
Think about anything you did for the first time. It's awkward at first. If you were to teach me a dance step, I would be super awkward at first. You get on social media at first, you're going to be awkward. And if your MO is to avoid awkwardness at all costs, you're not going to do it, period. But if you think, okay, as I said this earlier, and I had somebody remember it, and so I wrote it down, that awkwardness doesn't stand a chance in the face of disciplined repetition. Mm. It'll go away. And so if you are disciplined in your repetition on something, you'll be awkward, but not for long. You just know that's part of the process. I'm awkward at first, but now I'm not awkward forever. You're only awkward because you haven't done it for long, period. And so if awkwardness is a requirement for growth, that's my ticket to entry into being great at something. So let me just go, let's get awkward right away, you know? So that like we, instead of avoiding it, let's get awkward. And I know that sounds funny, but it's like, let's think about like learning a credit report for the first time, learning a new presentation. It's going to be awkward. Mm-hmm. Your first podcast, awkward as could be. Go back to your first ones. Mm-hmm. Right? They're ridiculously awkward. And that's great. I love that feeling of, man, this is awesomely awkward right now. But it's not going to be that long. I will master this shit by the time I get through with this. Mm-hmm. I will figure it out. And that's the mentality that people need to have. And so for getting on social media, first get on there, realize that you're going to suck at first, and then start watching the accounts that you like. And I can tell you the formula.
Tell us.
But there's elements to it. So I'll walk you through the formula, but there's more. This isn't the only piece to it. But so I've been on social media for 12 plus years since it first started, but I hated it for the first 11. And I was the person who was like, you know, I go, my content isn't good for social media because it requires you to think, it requires you to study, it requires you to engage and to spend more than a minute. And so I was sort of this, you know, holier than thou, and like righteous indignation, maybe is what it's called, of saying, you know what, it's I'm too mature for that, whatever kind of excuse I had for myself. And then I realized that maybe I'm the guy that sounds like my parents. Like the music in the 90s were way better than going on now, right? The music today, rap today sucks, which by the way, it does. Nothing better than my era, but of course your era was better too, right? And so that's just how we are. And I said, well, maybe I'm just that old guy that needs to grow and learn. What if that were the case? What if there was actually something here and I was just too stubborn? Maybe I need to take some of my own medicine. So I found somebody that said I was doing it wrong and actually understood me. And I said, I'm not going to do a few things. One, I'm not going to do dance videos. I like dancing. I like Latin dancing, but I'm not going to do that on camera. I don't think that's what I need to be known for.
Okay.
Second, I'm not going to use clickbait and I'm not going to sensationalize or exaggerate. I'd rather have a smaller following on something that's real. And plus my network and my mentors will look at me and be like, really, Renee, I hope you enjoy the clicks you got out of that fake ass shit you just said.
Yeah.
Right. You got to have people like that around you to hold you to some standard. Right. Yeah. And so we did that and we realized that there is a market, an appetite for it. And I didn't have to do the dance videos and I could really stay true to what it was that I believed. I didn't have to jump around. I could still be thought provoking. And so the solution is four things. It's hook, objection, problem, solution. That's one of the ways to look at it. By the way, there's so many formulas. This is one rendition of it. If you were to go talk to my guy, Mo Ismail, who runs our social, he would break it down in 48 different steps. You should have him on your podcast, by the way. He will blow minds.
Okay. We will expect that connection after.
Yeah, for sure. You're welcome, Mo. But I look at it from beginning, it's like, even if I were to take out objection, hook, problem, solution, but the objection is powerful. I'll give you an example. The biggest mistake that I made was not distinguishing between what we call a captive audience and a non-captive audience. Mm-hmm. That's the first distinction, right? And a captive audience is an audience that can't scroll you. They can't swipe you. They're stuck. That's an in-person audience. It's in a meeting. You can't go anywhere. Mm-hmm. So it's captive. The tools to connect with them are different. It's story. Hey, I remember when I was a kid and I tell you a lifelong story and you're engaged. That works. The other mistake I was being known versus not known. And a lot of us copy the known people, the big brands and what they do, but they're known. They have an advantage. They're already pre-hooked. I already know Gary Vee and I can just see his lips moving and I kind of want to know what he's saying. But if I see Joe Blow with his lips moving, I don't give a shit. Right?
Yeah.
So being known versus not known, captive versus non-captive. Those are two critical distinctions. Let's just assume that none of us are known. Mm-hmm. I act as if I'm not known. Now I'm a little more known than I was before. I'm still not that known. Right? It's just, there's 8 billion people in the world. And almost all of them are on social. So let's just go with the fact that we're not known. So we can't take a known strategy. So all the biggest names out there, they don't apply to you and I. So what does? Well, if you're not known and I have a non-captive audience, that means that I have 3 seconds to audition for your attention. Three. And it's an audition. That means that I always assumed that I'm posting content for people that know me. It's my social media following. Aren't they going to see it? Nope. It's not going to show it to them. Oftentimes it shows it to people that have no freaking clue who you are. But yet you're talking to them as if they know you and use inside language and things that you assume that they understand. Doesn't work. So there's that. Okay, so now I've got a 3-second audition. That's where the power of a hook comes into play. Now, hook has become pretty popular recently, but it's not new. Old-time headline writers in newspapers were hook writers, except they had to walk by a newsstand and I had to look to my left or my right, wherever it was, and I had to see in bold print and probably 3 to 5 words, enough for me to go, oh, what is that? And pick up the magazine. No different than as I'm scrolling with my thumb, when do I stop? So these are all understanding things that you have to do. Now, don't overthink this shit either, by the way. I'm just telling you the backdrop of it. So let's take something like taxes. Okay. Nobody wants to talk about taxes.
Really?
So how would a loan officer typically approach that? They'd probably get and they grab their phone. They'd say, "Hey, everybody, that's Tax Tuesday. And I want to talk, scroll." You're already done. Nobody gives a shit about Tax Tuesday. Right. And, or, "Hey, it's Tax Tony. And I'm here on Tax Tuesdays." And we're going to, "No, we don't care." Right. And if you start labeling a day after the week, Motivation Monday, get out nobody of here. Cares. Get out. No one cares, especially if I've never known who you are and you're going to give me a regurgitated quote. But no, thank you. Not needed. Uh-huh. Now, there's a few people that might like that and all that sort of stuff, but no. Now, not saying that that's not good, by the way. I'm just saying it might not capture the attention of the people you're trying to get. So now, how would we hook talking about, let's say, a 1031 exchange? Some people would say, "Well, let me tell you about the five benefits of a 1031 exchange." And I go, "No clue what that is. Swipe." So how would you grab their attention in 3 seconds? One of the ways would be, "Here's how the rich avoid paying taxes."
Solid.
Now, that's the first second of the three. I still have two more seconds. "Here's how the rich avoid paying taxes." One thousand. So now I have to go and uncover, this is where strategic thinking comes into play, and empathy. What could be an objection that they would have to that phrase?
"I'm not rich."
If I were to tell you, Sarah or Hannah, "I'm going to show you how the rich avoid paying taxes," what objection could you have to that?
"I'm not rich."
Yeah.
Okay. One is, "I'm not rich." Second one could be what?
"People should pay taxes."
Yeah. It's illegal to avoid them, right? "I'm not rich" and is illegal. So I have to cover that objection in the next phrase, in the next second. "So here's how the rich avoid paying taxes. And don't worry, what I'm about to teach you is perfectly legal." Or, "Here's how the rich avoid paying taxes. And don't worry, you don't have to be rich to still benefit from this." So now I've hooked you, covered your objection. And then the next piece is, in fact, Hannah, do you want a Band-Aid?
Sure.
Really? I mean, honestly?
No, I don't need a Band-Aid.
Sarah, you want a Band-Aid?
I'm good.
You're good, right? Kind of a weird request, isn't it? Now, if I were to say, "Hannah, you're bleeding right here, right there a little bit. You want a Band-Aid?"
"Oh, yeah, if I'm bleeding, I would definitely like a Band-Aid."
Right. So now, all of a sudden, this Band-Aid that was awkward and really weird, now all of a sudden was valuable because it's valuable in the context of a defined problem. And so many people are offering Band-Aids to solutions that people don't think exist or to problems they aren't even aware of. Why would I need that? They're walking around, "You're telling me this stuff, there's no value to me." So before we offer solution, we better define the problem. That's part three. So here's how the rich avoid paying taxes. And don't worry, you don't have to be rich to still benefit from this. What a lot of people do when they buy or they sell their home is they incur a gain. They make money. And the government loves that because they get to tax you on that money. But what the rich do is they employ what's called a 1031 exchange. So here's what you do. Solution. Let me tell you about a 1031 exchange. Now, that says, "I want to know all about it." And if you wanted to, at the end, you could say, "And if you want to learn more about it, just send me a DM. We'll talk about it." I don't recommend doing that often. Like, that's where Gary Vee's jab, jab, hook comes into play. Jab, jab is content, value, value, value. Every once in a while, throw a hook and have a CTA. And so that, once they realize that, and by the way, you'll stumble and trip and fall over that formula. But if you watch people and you dissect it, just like anything, and I think people need to realize that social media isn't a hobby, it's a department. It's a department. Sales is a department. Marketing is a department. So is social media. And then when you get within social media, short form is a very different discipline than long form. Very different. Hook writing, copywriting, very different than just video editing. I mean, it's a department with a lot of people. And if it's done right, the ROI is fantastic.
Renee.
I mean, once we employed this, within 6 months, we grew 1 million followers on TikTok and then started a new account on Instagram. And grew, right now we're at 203,000.
Congrats.
That's awesome.
Thank you.
So do you think that every mortgage and real estate professional should be on social media right now?
I know some of the biggest hitters that aren't. And I have some of the people that aren't doing anything that are. So it's, do I believe they all should be? I think it would be smart for them to be, mm-hmm. because they're going to get found that way first and people will search for them. And at some point people are going to be like, why aren't you on social? Mm-hmm. I think it does get, you know, but I actually have respect for people that aren't. And one of the reasons that I didn't put any energy on it before, because most of my clients didn't have social media accounts. I mean, you're dealing with a CEO of a billion dollar organization. They don't have an Instagram.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They just don't. You're dealing with a doctor. They don't have an Instagram. Mm-hmm. They barely have a Facebook. And if they do, they use a fake name mm-hmm. and as a way to keep in touch with their family. And so for me, there was no value. But then once we expanded our audience, I wanted to be known by more people. I started realizing, okay, there's another audience. And then TikTok expands you globally. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I go through airports and people are like, hey, are you that guy that does this? And you know, the hands gesture.
Oh my gosh.
It's wild.
That is wild. I know.
I'm not saying that they're qualified prospects, but at least they see
it. Yeah, but they're seeing your content. I know we're coming up on time and I have a couple more questions that I want to kind of get to quickly. But, you know, going back to filling the narrative gap, being that trusted source, how do I want to ask this? How do we as mortgage professionals or real estate professionals, how do we communicate to our clients or just to people in general that the media is wrong, that it is still a great time to buy. There are still some really great benefits. You know, when everybody, and I mean everybody, is screaming the opposite.
With such a loud voice.
Yeah.
Well, I think that it's exactly what needs to happen right now. Well, one, you know, if somebody is saying it's a bad time to buy, the last 4 conversations I've had about this whole thing, I said, I always want to go with the source. One, if I attack them, you're dumb, that doesn't work. No, you're wrong. You don't know what you're talking. That's just now I've triggered their defenses and it's not going to happen. I might say, I'm like, great. I've heard that too. Where did you hear it? Mm-hmm. One, I'll validate. Great. I've heard that too. So that there's no, now we're not fighting.
Right.
Where'd you hear it? And they're probably going to tell me either a relative, a neighbor, most likely the media. And if they say the media, I'm like, cool. Let me have another question. Do you trust the media? And if somebody says yes, I'll probably respond by saying, well, you're the first person I've ever said that. That's fascinating, right? And now the problem is saying no. I said, so do you, I'm kind of in the same boat. And here's why I don't trust the media. You notice I didn't go, so why do you trust them when it comes to housing? You're shooting your shot too fast. Reserve that. Remember, I've just teed up 3 questions and people try to shoot their shot too early. I'm going to go to the next one. I go, and I'm going to validate them. I said, me too. I said, the reason I don't is because they're, for a couple of reasons. One is they're a for-profit organization. They're not a public service organization. They're for-profit like you and I. And so they have quotas and budgets and they got to figure out what sells. And unfortunately what sells is negative news. The second is I've met a lot of reporters and not a single one of them was an expert in anything. They had great voices. They could read teleprompters really well, but they are not housing experts. And so I looked at all that. Once I saw behind the curtain, I started realizing I better go find my own information and I better find people that are doing it. So that's that piece. I have just politely dismantled the argument of the media. Mm-hmm. So now I've got to rebuild something else though. And so I go, so here's what I've come to learn. It's one of my favorite phrases. Here's what I've come to learn. I'm not saying, here's how it is. Here's what I've come to learn is that buying a house and financing a house are 2 completely separate things that everybody bundles together. So if you're listening to this, your first task is to separate those 2 moments, buying a house versus financing a house. They're different metrics. They're different processes. They're different key indicators in the market that determine whether one is good or bad. There's nothing that determines both at the same time. Right? So let's just look at buying a house. And there's research, plenty of it, that shows that buying a house right now is one of the best things that you could do. You look at the pessimists, they're still saying you're going to have over 5% appreciation by year 2026. You look at the optimists, it's going to be upwards of 23, 24%. You average it out, you're right around 10% to maybe 12%. Name another investment that at its worst, you're still going to make 5%.
Right.
And now let's zoom out over the last 80 years. Housing always wins. Mm-hmm. It's not going anywhere. And so, and the only time you lose money in a home is when you sell it. If you sell it at the wrong time. You can't lose if you don't sell. And so now, buying a home is great. And by the way, if I'm talking to a renter, I always ask this question. I said, I go, let me ask you a question. Is net worth important to you? And they, are you familiar with the concept of net worth? If they say no, then I have to start there.
Yeah.
Right. And I want to be some, and I want to be polite about that. I want to be like, interesting. It's not many people really do. Net worth is really the accumulation of your assets minus your liabilities. And it tells you how much you're worth on paper. And so do you know the average net worth? Are you looking to grow your net worth? It'd be another one. Yeah. I want to grow my net worth. Perfect. Do you know the average net worth of a homeowner? I said, well, it's right around $250,000. And I got the new research here, came out. And they said, wow. I said, do you know the average net worth of a renter? No, it's about $6,000. So owning a home is a 40x, 40 times more net worth. And so I'm in the business of growing your net worth. And the fun part is a lot of people that are renting, you're already paying a mortgage. It's just not your mortgage, it's someone else's.
Exactly.
And so if you want, I can show you 15 minutes how we can grow your net worth through home ownership. So now that whole process, right? I just generated a lead if they're interested. And will you get 100% of the time? No, but I bet you I get a higher percentage than somebody who doesn't do that.
For sure.
Right? And so now, once we go through that, why I don't trust the media and all those other pieces, and say, right now I've separated out home ownership. That's one way. It's a great time to buy. So now let's talk about financing a home, which is a very different process. Financing a home is going to be usually determined by the interest rate. Now, most people are comparing today's interest rate to that of what has been the last couple of years, around 3-4%. So if you use a comparison over the last couple of years, it seems like a worse time to finance a home. So now, let me ask you a question. Have you ever bought, would you buy Apple or Tesla? Do you believe in those stocks? Most people will say yes. It's a great stock. It's a strong buy. So, but why are people buying it? Because right now, not wanting to finance a home right now when it's a great time to buy, because you're thinking about where it's going. You're not thinking about the price. You're looking at where it's going. Mm-hmm. Not buying Apple or Tesla when it's on a skyrocketing trajectory is like saying, not wanting to buy own real estate right now because of the interest rate. It's like saying, I don't want to buy Apple or Tesla because I didn't buy it at a dollar. Mm-hmm. Those days are gone. Mm-hmm. 2-3% are gone. So that conversation of what it used to be is irrelevant to your growth and your net worth. So what we need to look at is, here's the most exciting part. You can't change the purchase price of a home, the original purchase price. You can always change the interest rate. So right now, if you're getting in at home, one of two things is going to happen. The worst case scenario is that interest rates go up. Wait, what do you mean worst case? I mean, that's the worst case. And you're going to tell me, thank you for getting me in while it was at the lowest mm-hmm. that I could have. Worst case scenario is that interest rates go down. They're thinking, why is that worst case? I go, because you think you're losing money. If they go down, I just come in and refinance and restructure your loan. You can always change the interest rate. But right now, you can't change the fact that you missed out on the best time to buy the home at that price. Because that's what you want to get in on. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, okay. Go back 2 years ago. You know what you had with low interest rates? 30, 40 offers on the same home.
Yeah.
Inflated.
You know what that did to the price? Inflated it. So you want to buy an overly inflated priced home at a lower interest rate? Or do you want to buy a great priced home at a little bit higher that you can change later? So let's separate those two pieces out mm-hmm. and let's talk about what it really means. That's the job of an advisor. That's the job of a true sales professional. Agents should do that and so should loan officers.
That's great.
Yeah, like meeting people where they are, not, you know, belittling where they are, but, you know, coming at them from an understanding perspective. That's, yeah, powerful. So
absolutely.
That's really good. I know we're coming up on time, but I want to ask you about your Amplify events because I see them everywhere. I hear about them everywhere. So I want to make sure all of our listeners know about them.
I think you two should join.
Tell us about them.
Tell us more. Sell us. Here we are.
Where's the next one?
Scottsdale, really horrible place.
Okay. You yeah. really have to twist our arm on that one.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I'm listening, right? I'm listening. No, the Amplify is, it's a journey, 2 day journey with me and 9 other people.
Okay.
Where we go deep into the science of influence, storytelling, body language, sequencing, timing, facial expressions, micro expressions, all the things. And we explore your origin story and how do we apply your origin story to your business? And how do we learn a sequence that gets people to pay attention and then act on what you say? And I've been using it this whole podcast, what we call the Amplify formula. Mm-hmm. It's a frame a message and then a tie down. If you notice my every question you answer, I back up and I don't just answer the question. I frame it first. Mm-hmm. And it might be framed through some research. It might be framed through a story, an example, a metaphor. And then I'll ask a question, but then I'll deliver the message. But at the end, I'll end it with, and this is what it means to you mm-hmm. as the audience. That methodology we practice and drill for 2 days. And the transformational nature of what happens when you follow the approach that works with the brain versus one that works against it, it's revolutionary. And people, you will not be the same person when you leave those 2 days.
Mm. That's awesome. All right. Sarah and I will do some homework when we get off this recording.
Oh, I don't think there's any homework to do. I think you just need to choose a
just
date.
Just go.
Come to Wisconsin. Yep.
Yep. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for spending all this time with us. I know that even though I've heard you talk twice recently, I just learned so much more. So we kind of end every podcast the same way. It ties into our name. And we want to ask you, how going into the new year, how are you lending it forward?
Well, I'm not a lender, so I got to think of it in terms of for me.
Right, exactly.
How am I lending forward?
Your knowledge, what you know, what
yeah.
you know.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. You know, to me, I don't exist to serve the rich and famous only. I do serve them well, and it's great. My courses are expensive, but I don't usually talk about what I do on that end, but I will tell you this, is that I do for people that have earned it, but maybe don't have the financial means. We do offer scholarships to people. I don't ever advertise it. I don't ever do anything like that, but we're doing a lot of free masterminds right now that serve as a win-win. One, you get 90 minutes of free content and training. And my goal is that even if you never did business with us again, you'd love those 90 minutes. But it also allows for those that are doing a little bit better to ascend into more and deeper work. Mm-hmm. And so what I love about that process is that I get to serve more people and still prospect to those that actually have the resources to invest more. So it serves our business and it serves them. And so that's one of the models, the changes that we've made for this next year.
I like awesome. That. And are those masterminds, are those online or are those also in person? Mm-hmm.
Those are online. Yep.
Okay.
And so we have one coming up in November. What is it? November. It's a master class. Excuse me. My mastermind is different.
Oh.
I'll put it in if there's a chat. I don't know if there's a chat here. Is there a chat?
There is. Yeah, don't ask us how to use it.
the bottom right-hand corner.
That's our master class. It is November 28th, 2023 at 12:30 p.m. Central to 2:30. And it's going to be a lot of what happens in the book, how to amplify influence, how to transform, how you communicate and lead.
That's awesome.
And we're going to go through case studies and some really cool stuff. Yeah, it's fun.
That's really cool. Are you going to have those in 2024 as well? Is that going to keep going? That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Very cool, Renee. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. Like I said, this was your second. I hope there's going to be a third, maybe fourth, fifth episode in our future. But we appreciate you so much. And I think our listeners are really going to get some powerful takeaways from this episode.
For sure.
Well, it's an honor. And then the answer is yes. You just tell me when.
Perfect.
Happy to do it.
Awesome. Thanks so much.
Thanks again for tuning into today's episode of the Lending Forward podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our channel, follow us on Instagram at Lending Forward, on YouTube and LinkedIn. Tune in next week for another new episode and go lend something forward today. Atlantic Bay Mortgage Group, LLC, NMLS number 72043, NMLSConsumerAccess.org is an equal opportunity lender and employer. Located at 600 Lynn Haven Parkway, Suite 100, Virginia Beach, Virginia, 23452.